Welcome to Arado Podcast. I hope February has started off well for you wherever you find yourself. Today's guest, Deepak Vadera, lives a pretty interesting life. He lives as a digital nomad, which means that he works remotely while traveling around the world. This type of a lifestyle is definitely one of the more positive things modern knowledge work has allowed, and the idea of combining work and travel has probably popped into many of our heads while working distributedly. In this episode, Deepak tells how he was able to arrange his life like this and how he conducts his everyday sales work for a company named Leadfeeder. If you wish to get in touch with him later, you can find his website from deepakvadera.com. And now to the episode. Today we have guest Deepak Vadera, a digital nomad and a backpacker who lives around the world but works from wherever he likes. Welcome to the podcast, Deepak.
Thank you very much for the intro, Veli-Pekka. It's a pleasure being on here today.
Yeah, we have also, you also did a sales workshop for us for some time ago. So Arado is we are already friends.
I did indeed. Yes, it feels like ages ago. It was only in February, but it does feel like, you know, years ago.
Yeah, it's been a rather busy year. So, but I think it has this whole COVID thing actually affected your lifestyle? How much has it affected that?
This is the most stagnant I've been in years. I was so used to kind of hopping around and traveling and not spending more than 3 or 4 weeks in one place. This is the most I've been in one location for so long. So it has definitely affected my way of living.
Where are you located at the moment?
At the moment, I'm in my native hometown in the Canary Islands in Spain. I thought it was wiser to come here and spend the lockdown over here than stay in the UK, which would usually be my base. When I'm kind of traveling and hopping around different places, I use the UK as my base just because there's so many airports that I can choose to travel from.
Yeah, you live a quite an interesting life, I have to say, sort of backpacking around the world and then and sort of choosing your place where you want to live. But let's start from the sort of very beginning. You have worked for example Hootsuite and Uber at some point. Like, how did you get to work in companies such as these before you decided to start backpacking?
Good question. So actually, Uber came before Hootsuite, so I'll go with that first. So I came across the idea about Uber, the concept, on a Reddit post. Like, someone had pitched the idea about Uber, and I read it a couple of times, and whilst going through it, I just came to the conclusion that this was going to be the next big thing. Like, it did sound like, at least. And as luck would have it, they were just kickstarting their operations in the UK, and they were hiring for people. So I reached out, inquired. I was determined to be part of that. I was determined to kind of, I wanted to be part of that vision that was portrayed in that message on Reddit. I ended up working as it was a hybrid role, sales and marketing. There was no defined role as such. And I was helping essentially drive the awareness piece. So essentially putting Uber on the map, getting them known and driving people to move towards that way of booking a cab or a vehicle of their choice.
Interesting. So you actually managed to catch Uber before it sort of became this big giant.
Pretty much. Like, can you believe it that I was going around actually getting people to sign up on Uber? When I tell people that nowadays, they think it's ridiculous. Like, why would no one even sign up to this so quick? As soon as they hear it, you'd assume that someone would get going. And there was a lot of hesitation and objections at that time when I was pitching Uber, you know, companies saying things like, we've been working with our, black cab company or this company that's around the corner that provides our taxi services for the past 20 years. Like, why should we switch to this app, but we don't even know the drivers and so on and so forth. So there's a lot of objection at the time, but nowadays it's ubiquitous. It's everywhere.
Yeah, interesting. You needed to be there to sort of tackle the first nose there. And how long did you work for Uber? Did you actually sort of see it grow into this huge thing?
I was there for 6 months, but during those 6 months, I went through a level of unprecedented growth at the company that I don't think I'll ever witness again. it was absolutely insane in a good way. Since there was no defined role, I actually got scouted by Hootsuite. A recruiter at Hootsuite had reached out. I like what they had to offer. I had used Hootsuite before in my former marketing role, so I knew what I'd expect from the platform. I knew its capabilities. I knew its potential. So it was a no-brainer. As soon as they reached out, I thought, you know, maybe this is me going somewhere a lot more consolidated, somewhere where there's a bit more structure, and I can kickstart my actual sales career there.
And what did you do? What did you do for Hootsuite?
So I started off as a junior SDR. I made my way up to the SDR team, eventually becoming an account executive, sales manager there, and then working in the emerging markets team, helping spread the word on Hootsuite in our emerging markets and growing that there as well.
Yeah. Well, then you mentioned on your web pages that you decided to quit your well-paying job at Hootsuite and then start to engage, sort of go towards this dream of being a backpacker around the world. Like, how did this, like, what kind of thoughts came before this? And
yeah, much to my colleague's surprise, I just handed in the notice one day and left my role there. And it wasn't something that happened, you know, one day after the other. There was a lot of thinking going on in the background. One day I was just heading into work. It was an hour and 30-minute commute for me because I was living in the outskirts of London, going into the city. And I was looking out around the carriage on the train, and I just saw all these people looking down on their phones. No one really seemed happy. No one was really smiling. I just thought to myself, like, it feels like I'm, you know, living to work. That's basically my life. Like, it feels like I'm living to work where it should be the other way around, right? You're working to live the lifestyle that you envision, that you'd like to live. And I felt like I wanted to do something that gave more meaning, more purpose. I wanted to live a life of fulfillment. And speaking with my partner, we're both passionate about travel. We wanted to go traveling for a while. It was something that we were really passionate about. We wanted to go backpacking, but we never thought it was the right time. We thought we'd have to save up for it or you know, just leave it for a later date. And we both sat down and we said, maybe now is the time. Let's just do it. Let's just stop delaying it and just go ahead and do it. And yeah, it was we spoke about it for a couple of times throughout a couple of months, and then decided to one day just go in and hand in my notice.
Yeah, did you already at that point have a plan, like how you're going to do it in practice? Like what will you be, how will you be making the money to actually travel?
Initially, no. So we had a rough idea of the countries we wanted to visit and things we wanted to do in certain countries. It wasn't fully kind of ready, but we had some things in mind already. So we went with that like basic plan. And we just said, you know, these are some of the countries we want to visit. We want to do these activities there. We want to take part in certain experiences. And we just went with that. We didn't really think about how we're going to maintain our lifestyle because we'd been saving for, you know, going traveling for later dates. So we already had something saved that we could kind of leverage on, take advantage of to kind of finance our travels. So we went with that idea. Working wasn't an option there. We're just purely thinking about backpacking and the experience. So we went out, we visited 16 or so countries. And then ultimately after six months or so, we had to come back because money was slowly running out. And then that's when I thought about looking for a job that allowed me to live that lifestyle that I really enjoyed for those past 6 months. I had no intention to go back into an office environment.
Did you sort of already then know, or was like digital nomadism, was that a thing that you knew that existed and people did live that lifestyle, or did you sort of start creating it on your own basically?
I hadn't come across anyone I knew personally. I just, every now and then I'd heard the word being thrown out there. I heard someone out there on YouTube, you know, doing these videos and documenting their lifestyle, but I didn't know anyone personally. But when I got back, I just thought to myself, that's the kind of life that I'd want to live. So I thought I'd look for a role that allows me to do, you know, be able to get, use my potential, my capabilities, and at the same time allowed me to continue my travel. So no, I didn't know anyone. I didn't know it was a thing.
Yeah,
but it was definitely the lifestyle that I wanted for sure.
Well, then did you find that place, or how long did it take for you to find that place?
Thankfully, it didn't take that long. It was at the very most 3 weeks. I was very fortunate because, you know, having had a very successful career at Hootsuite, I was very fortunate to have the doors open for me there. So I had a very good relationship with people who were higher up in the company, and they were happy to welcome me open arms and give me the role that I had. So I had that option open for me. But there was a colleague of mine, a former colleague of mine, who went and was working for a company called Leadfeeder, and he was traveling at the same time. And he reached out to me and he said, you know, I've been following your adventures on Instagram and LinkedIn, and I see you're back in the UK. And I take it you're looking for a role, because otherwise, I you know, knowing you, I know you'd be out there traveling. And, you know, would you be keen to hearing out what my company does? I definitely think it would suit, you know, the type of role that you're looking for. And because I'd worked with him, I trusted him. So we met up for a coffee. He pitched me the idea about Leadfeeder. I thought to myself, where has this tool been throughout my sales career? I could have used something like this. And again, I thought to myself, this is going to change sales. So I was happy to kind of get more information on the company. I had a call a couple of days after, you know, being in a startup, it was very easy to kind of get an interview. And I was happy to jump on a quick call with the CRO, and he liked what I had to say. I liked what he had to say. And then a couple of days later, I spoke to the CEO, and there I was, ready to start my career at Leadfeeder. So at the very most, from the moment I got back to the UK to when I actually started working, was at the very most a three-week period.
Yeah. So and your network definitely helped you in that. It is pretty interesting that you sort of, so you had been pretty open about that you wanted to live a life where you could travel and then work from wherever you like. And was, I guess, did that play a big part in your, that the former colleague knew that they would get sort of suggest Leadfeeder for you?
Absolutely. We'd get together for drinks after work. Again, he was a former colleague, so, you know, he knew me quite well. Yeah. I knew him quite well. He knew that this was the life that I one day wanted to live and pursue. Mm-hmm. So he definitely caught on to that. And thanks to him, you know, kudos to him, I was able to get the role at Leadfeeder. Otherwise, I wouldn't have heard about the company.
Yeah, and it is pretty interesting that sort of when you also kind of know what you want and then talk about it to people, they are also to help you with that. So I think this is a nice example of that kind of dynamic. How do you then, from there on, you sort of managed to get the job at Leadfeeder? I guess we could talk for a moment about Leadfeeder. What does that do? How does it help salespeople, and how does it work?
Well, in a nutshell, it shows companies what companies are visiting their website, and this helps marketing people because they know, you know, what is really driving those companies to the website in the first place. Is it a certain marketing campaign? Is it an ebook? Is it a partner that we're working with? They're running an initiative, and that's driving, you know, that company to our website. What is really working at driving those leads, so we can then double down on those efforts to generate even better traffic, more qualified traffic, and in turn leads to the website. And then secondly, it helps salespeople because they know what companies they should go after and sell to, rather than just cold calling companies at random and you know, bothering them throughout their days.
Yeah, so based on the IP address, it sort of tells you what companies are visiting a web page. Oh yeah, well, I mean, I guess for anybody who has worked in sales, they kind of know how useful that could be.
It makes a big difference because, again, you're not just going out and targeting companies randomly with no intent, you know, bothering them throughout their day. You're actually reaching out to genuine companies who have expressed real interest, and you can tap into that interest to reach out to them at the right moment, at the right time, and then therefore portray a better image of your brand and yourself as an individual.
Yeah, you'll have more data on who to target, and that usually saves a lot of time and a lot of effort.
Exactly.
Then how do you go yourself conducting sales? I guess it can't be that based on where you live, or sort of do you also use that sort of to move from place to place? Do you also use that to enhance your sales, or do you conduct your sales mainly sort of fully digitally?
It's mostly digital. So we use, you know, calling, emailing, social. And if I happen to be in a location where my buyer persona, you know, a certain buyer persona from a company is based, then I'd be more than happy to meet up with them in person and chat with them then. But otherwise, no, we have a very high volume low value, you know, leads, you know, the price of lead feeder isn't something significant. It can be closed online. We don't need to actually meet someone in person to close a deal. Our sales process is mainly online. It's all digital in that sense, with the odd exception of some, you know, enterprise deals where we might need to physically go meet someone in person or deliver a presentation on site. But otherwise, for the most part, it's all digital.
Yeah. You mentioned buyer personas. How open can you be about those? It would be actually interesting to hear how do you use buyer personas and what is actually the buyer persona that you are pursuing at LeadFeeder?
Yeah, so I'm more than happy to discuss that. So I'd sell to people who are both in sales and marketing. Like I mentioned, LeadFeeder is a platform for sales and marketing individuals, and within that, decision makers in either. So heads of marketing, heads of sales, sales directors, and so on. So these would usually constitute my buyer persona. It's a different approach for different companies because we target companies in the B2B space. Depending on the industry, there will be different approaches that work best for certain types of companies as opposed to others.
Did you already have this buyer persona from the get-go, or did you sort of need to like discuss about it or conduct some research about it, or how did you come about it?
Well, thankfully, we have a very strong alignment with our marketing team at LeadFeeder, so we know exactly the type of persona that we need to go after and you know, the persona who LeadFeeder resonates with. So it wasn't something that I had to go in and sketch. It was already there because we have a very strong alignment. We know, you know, when to target certain individuals, how to best target them, thanks to those insights that we get from our marketing team and our product.
Okay, so that's sort of how you conduct your daily work life. How do you then conduct your sort of lifestyle in general then? How do you decide where you go next? Do you have a travel plan always in mind, or is it more like, do you just live by what comes to mind next?
Pretty much the latter, with the only exception being I do give a lot of talks and do a lot of speaking gigs. So if I get invited to go somewhere, then I'll definitely consider those and I'll, you know, visit countries wherever I'm invited to go to speak. Otherwise, if there's a country that I've really wanted to visit or a place that I really wanted to live in for a while, I'll definitely consider that as well. So a bit of both. For the past year and a half, I've also been conducting a lot of workshops as well, like I did for the team at Arado. And so that brought me to Turku, for example. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't have visited Turku.
So
it very much depends on work, on these speaking gigs that I run and provide, and then places that I really wanted to visit myself.
It must be a lot of fun to sort of get to know different places. And
for me, it is for sure. It's the lifestyle that I've always wanted to live. I know it's definitely not for everyone. A lot of people want that stability, want to be, you know, honed down in one place and stick to that. But for me, I do like that spontaneity. I like, you know, that flexibility of living out of a backpack, of spending, you know, 2 weeks here and 2 weeks in another place. I really like that sort of lifestyle.
Yeah. How do you go? How does that work in practice? Like, do you then, when you arrive someplace, do you like just search for the cheapest hostel and go there, or like, what happens when you arrive to a new country?
I've already done a bit of planning prior to arriving there. So I always look for a place that an Airbnb, for example, that has, you know, good Wi-Fi for me to work out of. If that's not available or I struggle to find a place that's decently priced and easily accessible, then I would look for a co-working space, which again, there's a plethora of, you know, wherever you look in Europe at least. And I usually, yeah, manage to find a co-working space and work out of there if I'm not able to do so at an Airbnb. Or if I stay somewhere longer, then I would eventually end up going to a co-working space anyway, just for that social interaction, getting in touch with people and meeting them and spending time with others.
Yeah. And so at least co-working spaces are a crucial point of socializing and getting to meet new people in the area where you are.
Yeah, for remote workers, I reckon, for sure. And there's also things like meetup.com, for example, that could be other alternatives. But co-working spaces are a great way to meet other people and get to know other people from different walks of life and people who are maybe passionate about that same location where you are. You know, maybe something brought them to, you know, the Canary Islands, and you want to know, understand and get to know why they came to the Canary Islands in the first place. Especially for me, being my hometown, I'm even more curious to know why. So it's a great place to get to know other like-minded people, other people from, like I said, different walks of life, people who've experienced different things. And it's a great chance to, again, put yourself out there and have that face-to-face interaction, which you have less of working remotely.
Yeah. And I guess those places already kind of have the culture also of getting to know people, and you come there with the intention and mindset of sort of hearing stories and meeting new people.
Exactly.
What do you find the hardest part in your lifestyle? What kind of challenges do you face?
It's a good question. I haven't been asked that for a while. I honestly can't think of anything that would come to mind. I really can't think of anything. I would say, like, at some point when I had just joined LeadFeeder and I was starting to travel around different places, I did struggle to find places with solid Wi-Fi networks, Airbnbs, and I had to, you know, I had a call and the Wi-Fi died on me, and then I had to quickly go find a co-working space or rush somewhere. So that was a challenge. But aside from that, I can't really think of any other, you know, challenges or hindrances in my day-to-day relating to my lifestyle, at least.
Well, and if sort of, I guess the hindrances would be the sort of not having the stability and having to always come up with a plan to next place. But if you actually enjoy those, then
yeah. kind of. Exactly. At least for me, no downsides. Like, this is the life that I've dreamt of living. No challenges as such.
Yeah. What is the sort of, do you have some sort of fondest memories, or what are like the best places you visited in, well, I guess in the past few years? Like this year you have been pretty stable.
Bit of an exception.
yeah, exactly.
One of my favorite countries so far has definitely been Japan. It's a totally different culture. It's almost as if you're stepping into the future, especially if you're in one of the cities. It's a marvelous place, and even the countryside, it hasn't been, you know, exploited as you see in other countries, and, you know, it's very well kept. It's a just totally different culture, and it's definitely been one of my favorite places to go to. I've been there a couple of times now, and yeah, Japan, a lot of parts in Southeast Asia I've visited quite a few times. I'm keen to explore more of the Balkans. I was intending to do a tour of the Balkans this year, but unfortunately that got put on hold. But hopefully next year, if things start getting better and borders start opening up, and if it's safe to do so, then I intend to do a tour of the Balkans.
Have you developed some kind of heuristics on how to actually get in contact with people and how to get to know them, or does that more like come to you naturally?
I think it comes naturally, especially working in sales. I'm used to interacting with people, so
yeah, true.
I don't have that shyness factor. And usually, I just use the likes of Meetup, because if I don't really find any co-working spaces close to where I am, otherwise the co-working spaces are my go-to for sure.
Yeah, and I guess those have really sort of made the game a bit easier. That I would guess that, for example, in Finland, it might sometimes be a bit hard to sort of get to know people by chit-chatting, because we haven't gotten into the small talk culture yet. But sort of finding the right places where people are actually interested in each other and have the time to sort of talk, that sort of changes everything. That so I guess you'll be able to find friends for wherever in the world.
I like to think so. Yes.
Yeah. Then if someone listening to this podcast would be interested in sort of having this kind of a lifestyle and also living like you do, what do you have some kind of tips on starting? What should you take into account when beginning and sort of starting to plan for this?
I'd say work on your time management. Work on, you know, that self-motivation. What really drives you as an individual? Just because when you are working remotely, you don't have anyone looking on top of you, you know, telling you what to do, asking you to follow a certain structure. You do have to rely on synchronous communication for a lot of the times. So you need to have sort of that structure individually yourself to be able to plan and coordinate your day in the best way possible to be able to tackle your objectives and goals. So you need to have that sense of responsibility and that sense of self-motivation, and then really work on your time management to kind of build your work schedule around the life that you want to live. So there is a high degree of planning involved. Whilst a lot of the times I do go with the flow, I do a lot of planning behind the scenes. Mm. And so I'd say, yeah, really work on kind of having that systematic structure in your life.
How do you yourself self-motivate then?
So like I said before, I'm living a dream. So that's already being able to continue living that dream for me itself is a motivation.
Yeah.
So I know I have certain countries that I would like to visit or certain experiences that I would like to partake in. So I know that's what keeps me going because that's, again, it's the type of life I'm already living and that's what I continue to aspire to. So yeah, for me, that's already my motivation.
Yeah. And then time management, do you use some methods for that or? Like what does your day plan look like then?
I leverage quite a lot on the Google Suite. It provides me with most of the tools that I need to structure my day to day and carry out most of the work that I need, as well as Slack, for instance, to communicate with the team that I manage. So yeah, most of that is fine. I do have a to-do list that I plan the day before. So I know exactly as soon as I wake up on a given morning, I know exactly what I need to tackle that day and go through, and then hold myself accountable if I haven't done so at the end of the day. Like, these are the things that I didn't go through today. They need to be done tomorrow. Or if I didn't get them done, why didn't I get them done? Like, how can I ensure that things don't get left behind? Because, you know, that could be costing my company money. I could be leaving money on the table if I don't reach out to certain prospects at a certain moment in time. So yeah, just having that to-do list that I review every afternoon to ensure that I've managed to finish things throughout the day, and then plan for the next day in advance. So as soon as I wake up, I know exactly what I need to go through and I can get going straight away.
Yeah, gotcha. Then what tools is your team using and you are using for sort of working efficiently remotely?
So we use Slack. It's basically the company's lifeline.
Yeah.
So Slack, Zoom, Calendly to book meetings. We use Loom to record videos. We do engage in a lot of video prospecting as well. So sending videos to our prospects just so they can better empathize with us. They can get a feel for who's on the other side, just because they don't get that face-to-face interaction. So that works really well for us.
So you don't use meetings, but rather make a video that you send to the client.
We do both. So we use Zoom for the actual demo calls that we have with prospects and clients as well. But yeah, the videos that we send to prospects using Loom really help us kind of get those conversations going, or really help us connect with those individuals at a more human level.
Yeah, and you said that you rely on asynchronous communication in many ways. Have you sort of designed your company communications around that, or is it sort of that it just sort of happens that way?
We already had a solid foundation when I started. I mean, when I joined the company, we were just under 20 people. So a lot of the things were still being worked out, but yeah, we did have a solid foundation that we could then build upon and always improve. And we built a lot of systems and processes on top of that, you know, after testing what worked best, what didn't, and then incorporating what did to ensure that we can be as effective as possible whilst working remotely, and at the end of the day, hold people accountable for what they've done, what they haven't done.
Yeah, and is that, I guess LeadFeeder is based, it's a sort of remote first. And is it, do you consider yourself a remote first company?
So we have an HQ in Finland. So the people who are based in Helsinki, they work in the office, and everyone else elsewhere works remotely. I still think they have a remote first culture, but the office is there for people to go in and work out of and get that social interaction.
Yeah. If they so please.
Exactly. So giving them that option, but it's not held against them.
Yeah. Do you have a lot of people sort of living like you do, that they actually prefer traveling?
Quite a lot. We've got one individual who lives out on an RV, for example. We've got a couple others who, like myself, hop around living out of a backpack. So there are a fair number of people who live that sort of lifestyle.
Hmm. Yeah. What is your hunch about? Are people going to find? Also, will people start living like this more in the near future? Do you think this will gain in popularity?
I think so. I think it's definitely the way to go. People want to be trusted to perform their duties to the best of their abilities, and not have someone dictate kind of their schedules. They want to feel trusted. They want to feel valued. And you know, a lot of companies that I speak with, they, you know, especially in sales, I speak with a lot of sales managers, and they claim, you know, I can't let my team work remotely. It's a big struggle for me. I can't wait till we can get back to offices. And I just answer, like, why did you hire your salespeople in the first place if you can't trust them?
Yeah, it's a really weird. Like, it seems that actually it's pretty many sort of the managerial level people who are having the hardest time with sort of coping with this forced remote part of last year.
And having been forced to work, given the current situation, I think a lot of people will want to continue living this way. They'll realize, like, I can be equally as productive from home as I can from the office. It might not be for everyone, but a lot of people will certainly agree that they can perform their duties from home without any issues, and they're more efficient. They save time from commuting. They can, you know, wear whatever they please whenever they're working. They can work around their own schedule as long as they get the work done. That's what matters.
Yeah, exactly. I really do hope that this sort of opens up eyes for many, many organizations that how much can actually be done these days from wherever people enjoy working.
I hope so too.
What's next for you? You said that are you going to start with your project in the Balkans during next year then, when the lockdowns get, and what next do you have planned?
I hope so. I really like to. And apart from that, it's been hard to plan. I thought the pandemic would be over by now. So it's been hard to plan. I've tried not to plan too much in advance, just to not let myself down. So, we have goals as a company, things that we want to achieve and you know, milestones that we'd like to hit as an organization. So at least that's something that we can somewhat control to a certain degree, how much effort we put in. So those are some things that I'm looking forward to, my team, my sales team, hitting some milestones, hitting some objectives and goals. On a personal level, most of my aspirations and goals are mainly travel related. So I haven't been looking ahead too much, kind of just waiting out how things progress and go. But ideally, yeah, I'd like to do that travel across the Balkans next year, again, if it's safe to do so. And then maybe consider other experiences and other travels after that.
Yeah, how does this go? Like, do you consider doing this until you retire?
I haven't looked that far. I haven't thought about it that far. Certainly until a point where I can say, you know, like, this is it. I'm tired. I don't want to be living like this, or I feel like I need some stability. I need to be somewhere fixed for a longer period of time. But at the moment, yeah, I haven't thought about that because, as I said, it's a dream. I'm living the dream, something that I thought about for so long, and it's actually happening. I still can't believe it myself to a certain point. Like, I can't believe I'm actually doing something that I thought about doing for so long, something that I thought was near to impossible. And just the fact that I'm able to live that means that I'm, you know, just looking towards that. I haven't even thought about a day where I wouldn't want to live the lifestyle that I'm living at the moment.
So yeah, it's actually pretty cool to hear that it still sort of amazes you even.
Exactly. I've been doing this for the past 3.5 years, and still it feels equally as exciting as the first day.
Yeah. How do people actually, by the way, like, react? Well, I guess most of them are sort of curious like I am, and sort of positively amazed. But do some people have like negative connotations towards digital nomadism?
Some people feel like they wouldn't be able to live out of a backpack. They feel like they need more things. They feel like they need more stability in life. They need to kind of get going and you know, buy a house, buy a car, settle down, start a family. So that's some of the things that I hear often. And a lot of the times it's more revolves around that stability. Like, I need to be somewhere, you know, I'm getting older. I can't afford to live the lifestyle that you're doing. It's just not for me. Maybe if someone in their early 20s, maybe they could get away with it, but it's not for us. So those are some of the things that I hear oftentimes. But for the most part, people react just like the way you did.
Yeah. Sort of. And it's easy to do. So it's actually inspiring to hear that you actually managed to create that life for yourself. So
thank you.
Thanks for this interview. It was definitely interesting. And if people have further questions or someone would like to contact you later, where can they find you?
I'm more than happy to have an e-coffee or a chat whatever you prefer. You can reach me via LinkedIn. I'm very active on the platform, or via other social channels like Instagram at Full-Time Backpacker is my handle. Or if you'd like to look me up on Facebook as well, it's Digital Nomadpreneur. Alternatively, you can drop me an email at deepak.padera@leadfeeder.com.
Yeah, great. So thank you for the interview, and I wish you all the best on your future travels.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for listening to the episode. If you wish to know more about us, Arado, as a company, be sure to visit our web pages at arado.fi. We are a group of senior software developers, and our company's main language is actually English, so we are really easy to reach if you wish to get in touch. We also have just now done some updates on our web pages, so if you're interested, it would be great if you could visit them. Thanks, and take care.